Let's get real, schooling is not the same as learning. In other words, going to school and getting a diploma does not mean that the student has learned much. Every day, 1.5 billion children and adolescents around the world go to buildings called schools. Now with the pandemic, well, some of them log on, some of them watch on TV, and some don't even have the money to do either. So they're waiting. Waiting for these buildings to open up again. But how much are they actually learning? Some contend not much. In fact, there's a whole set of articles that have been unleashed by some of the largest publications around the world claiming that education has become the world's biggest scam. That's the state of affairs. Have we lost our guiding star? It used to be that the educational arc to serve global society was front and center. The United States is increasingly becoming more employer-driven when it comes to schooling. Does this serve global society? The debate is raging. Today, we welcome back higher ed changemaker Ben Nelson, Chancellor of Minerva University, and we engage in the discussion of how exactly we can refocus the educational arc to serve global society. Let's go to Jules Coleman and Todd McLeese as we jump into the discussion.
The main goals, the main purpose of higher education, this transformative period in people's lives, is to enable them to take their place in society in an appropriate way, and also to be able to live a life that displays their own agency, their responsible agency, a life that they own rather than a life that merely happened. And that is really a central feature of higher education. And the failure to do that, in some ways, is a failure of value, a failure for educational institutions, especially those of higher education, to play the role that is essentially theirs. And we probably both agree as well that higher education has failed miserably, more so now than ever, with regard to that responsibility, all hidden behind the idea that education is supposed to be value neutral, not essentially purposeful, not largely normative, but in fact, it can only serve its function if it is. But the question I'd like to ask you is, what is your feeling about the many of the alternatives to traditional forms of higher education that seek to compress the period of time between what's called late adolescence and employability, where the function is getting someone in the economy in some way, improving their life prospects in that simple way, but in a way that doesn't really emphasize in any significant way their capacity to play a role as a citizen of a free society or as a critic of an unfree one. And so much of the movement in alternatives to higher education, and Minerva stands in opposition to this, I think, and rightfully so, but so much of the movement in higher education is really to compress the period of higher education in the name of employability, on the theory that, and rightly so, that people are worried about a lot of things, among other things, putting food on their table, having a job, being able to care for their family, and so on. And I do think this kind of tension in higher education is something that's going to be played out over the next 10, 20 years or so.
Jules, it's as always, you ask extraordinarily insightful and to the heart of the matter questions. And I agree with you that I am sympathetic, highly sympathetic, to the real problems and plight of individuals, and by saying individuals, I really say the vast majority of the population that have practical concerns as their primary concerns. And you know, it is the definition of privilege when those types of concerns aren't at the forefront of your mind. Privilege really cannot be afforded to a majority. when a majority has is enjoy certain norms that others covet, that is a sign of discrimination. It is not a sign of privilege. When you have the privilege of a few of the minority that don't have to worry about practical considerations, that is when you know that you know fundamentally the approach is completely broken. And so, yes, I have sympathy for those who want to shorten that time frame. The problem is that they you cannot find or have magic bullets, right? And the reality is that the society does the greatest disservice to those who are in the more vulnerable positions in society by promising the get rich quick, the shortcut, the you can skip, this 4-year experience and you can get the same thing in 6 weeks, in 6 months, in a year. It just is not true. And so what is the solution? Because the reality is that a 4-year break, right, or extending independent adulthood by 4 years is simply unrealistic for so many of our fellow citizens, and not to mention those around the world. The reality is that the only way to actually address both is to start earlier. We cannot, on the one hand, acknowledge that both secondary and post-secondary education is a colossal failure, which it is, and say, well, we can only fix it by this stuff after you go through it. No, you actually have to start in 9th grade, maybe 8th grade, 7th grade, right? The point where we see student engagement falling off a cliff, where we see long-term learning vanish among a huge swath of the population, and say the time that we have starts here. And I believe that if you actually extend the time that you have with students, think about a 6 or 7 year arc that starts in 9th grade or in 8th grade. All of a sudden, you can have a vastly superior holistic education, one that absolutely trains people to be not only citizens in their society, but really members of the human community, and are able to do so in a vastly more efficient and effective time frame. So I don't want to reject the idea of compressing the time and enabling individuals to pursue the economic security that they desperately need, but you can't do that by creating shortcuts, right? I would argue that 4 years isn't enough. I would much rather, and in fact, this is one of the reasons why we're now have a high school curriculum, I would much rather be given 3 years for higher education if I had 4 years in high school than having 4 years of higher education without impact in high school. And I think that has to be the solution.
You mentioned earlier in the conversation that original vision versus where we are today, 85 to 90% accurate, given an unwavering, purposeful mission, et cetera. When you think about 5 years from now and the role that Minerva plays in the higher education landscape and its purpose at that time, given the constituencies, where do you think Minerva is 5 years from now? And what role does collaboration with industry partners and NGOs and governments, and what role does globalization play as you think about your vision today?
Our goal is a global reformation of secondary and post-secondary education. We have never been accused of being unambitious. And in order to actually create a reformation, and we use the word reformation intentionally, as we use all of the words that we use, primarily because we don't believe in disruption. We don't believe that institutions should be burnt to the ground and that something else should be replaced. We also you know, think that transformation in and of itself is a little bit too non-directional. There are a lot of ways to transform, but to reform, to actually go back to first principles, understand what it is that we're trying to do, and form around those principles is I think the job at hand that we at least have it as the core of our life's work and what we do. And that means not only a collaboration with a wide array of institutions, from high schools to universities to governments, NGOs, corporations, etc., but it also is fundamentally a global conversation. We are unabashed globalists, and I know that is increasingly less popular, but the idea that we can cocoon back into national, state, community boundaries is farcical. Right? 50 years ago, if you were a shopkeeper in Bangladesh, you may have been able to get away with thinking about your conditions in a 500-foot radius is really the only things that mattered in your day-to-day. But today, that same institution needs to understand what's happening in Bentonville, Arkansas, let alone in Frankfurt and in the outskirts of Paris and all sorts of other places. Or otherwise, that individual's livelihood is going to be gone. There is no place in the world left to cut yourself off, and there are no actions that we take as human beings that don't have fundamental ripple effects everywhere else in the world. And so our approach has been global from day one. The vast majority of the students that are in Minerva programs are not from any one given country, from any one given geography, from any one given demographic or any other, you know, category you want to display. The vast majority of our partnerships across high schools, universities, corporations are, again, not in any one region, continent, country, etc. And our approach is one where we either survive and thrive as humanity, or we get destroyed as a human race. And that kind of animating factor behind what we do is very pervasive for Minerva. And so the brief answer is there is no success for us 5 years in the future unless our scale and scope of collaborations and partnership doesn't increase by at least one, if not two, orders of magnitude.
Chancellor Ben Nelson is the founder of Minerva and a visionary with a passion to reinvent higher education. Prior to Minerva, Nelson spent more than 10 years at Snapfish, where he helped build the company from startup to the world's largest personal publishing service. Prior to joining Snapfish, Nelson was president and CEO of Community Ventures, a network of locally branded portals for American communities. Nelson's passion for reforming undergraduate education was first sparked at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School, where he received a Bachelor's of Science in Economics. After creating a blueprint for curricular reform in his first year of school, Nelson went on to become the chair of the Student Committee on Undergraduate Education, a pedagogical think tank that is the oldest and only non-elected student government body at the University of Pennsylvania. This episode was recorded live on Clubhouse. Check us out at the Future X Tribe. It was produced by the Future X Tribe, Beyond Academics, and BNext Global. Executive Director and Chief Moderator, Matt Alex. Edited by BNext Global Media. Our music is by David Cutter. I'm Hector H. Lopez. We'll see you next time as we continue our discussions with the higher ed changemakers on the FutureX podcast.